You build the world. The roads, schools and hospitals. That's your work. And we're with you on this journey. Procore, your trusted construction partner. Discover our construction management platform at procore.com.
It's Wednesday, the 6th of March, 2024, and this is Reconstruction with David Taylor and Phil Bishop from the Construction Index. And this is the first of two episodes, back-to-back episodes of Reconstruction, because we normally go out on a Wednesday, as I'm sure our regular listener will know. But we also wanted to discuss the Chancellor's budget, which is going to be announced today. We won't have time to actually comment on that today, so we're going to do another episode tomorrow, so look out for that, and we'll be joined by an economist, a guest, who will be able to give us some analysis of what Mr. Hunt says. But in the meantime, we'll carry on with today's episode, and we have a guest with us again today. So our guest this morning has come to talk to us about a topic that we've actually discussed several times on the podcast already, namely the sustainable alternative to diesel fuel for construction equipment. This is a very much a live topic in the industry. I'm sure most of our listeners will appreciate that. And we've had comment from other people, and mainly contractors, namely particularly Balfour Beatty, talking about their policy on diesel replacement and sustainable fuels and that kind of thing. But today we've got somebody who's actually on the front line when it comes to choosing sustainable alternatives to diesel. And our guest today is Merrill Lynch, Joint Managing Director of Top 10 Plant Hirer, L. Lynch Plant Hire. Welcome, Merrill.
Hi, David. Hi, Phil. It's great to be here to talk about a subject that I'm extremely passionate about, which is sustainability.
Yeah, well, good to have you. I'm sure most of our listeners will be familiar with L. Lynch Plant Hire because, as I said, you're a major player in the market and your machines seem to be just about everywhere. So obviously, this is something which is going to affect your business fundamentally. You must be quite a large consumer of yes. diesel fuel already. And, roughly, give us an idea of the scale of your fleet. How many machines do you have?
Yeah, so we've got over 2,000 items on the fleet of heavy kit.
Yeah, and you specialise really in operated plants,
don't
you?
Right.
So, as you say, heavy machines, excavators, dumpers, that kind
Absolutely.
Of thing. Absolutely. Yeah, earth moving kit. So yeah, so you've definitely got a dog in this particular race. So tell us a little bit about your approach to this. I mean, you've said you're extremely passionate
Absolutely.
About sustainability. I remember a couple of years ago when the red diesel rebate was coming to an end, almost exactly 2 years ago, in fact. L. Lynch Plant Hire did put out an announcement basically telling its customers that if they wanted, they could have HVO, the hydrotreated yes. vegetable oil, sort of drop-in alternative to diesel. Is that the path you've chosen to go down to, or are you open to other alternatives as well?
I think our place in the market is really to serve our customers with what they ask us for, what they require. So we've got many customers, BAM, Skanska and others, that specify HVO from the off. So
right.
that's what we do. We supply HVO in all the equipment that we supply to BAM, Skanska and others. And then there's other contractors such as Balfour's that they don't want us to supply HVO. So
no.
we really... We give the customer what they ask for.
Right, okay. Because, HVO is a bit of a, I don't know, a curate's egg, isn't it? It's because a lot of people say, well, this is a great sustainable alternative to diesel fuel, and there are other sceptics out there who say that actually the vegetable oil itself isn't necessarily sustainable. So I think the jury's out on that. But it's certainly one of the first mainstream alternatives to diesel when people started to switch, wasn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. And it's a great stopgap.
Yeah.
You know, it's a short-term way to reduce emissions or, you know, overnight. Mm. But certainly, I think the information coming out, making palm oil, having to mass produce that, does look like that will lead to deforestation, which is the last thing any of us wants. But certainly is a stopgap.
Right. And it's actually, it's not just that it's a vegetable, it's not a fossil fuel, but it's also cleaner to burn, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, yes, absolutely, yeah. absolutely. And so it does have its place, for sure. And it's making, it is making an impact in reducing emissions, no doubt about it.
Mel, can I ask, I'm going to butt in here for a minute and ask, you're supplying HVO to some people, diesel to others. What's the split roughly? Are you buying as much HVO as you are diesel, more HVO?
Yeah, we're buying less HVO than diesel. I'd say the split between our customers, it's 20% HVO, 80% diesel.
By volume of liquid?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's the split. But as we know, there's emerging technologies, electrics up and coming, hydrogen. We've got a lot of hybrid equipment as well. Mm-hmm. So these are taking more and more of our fleet size
I just want to go down that point. I mean, maybe we'll come back to HVO in a second. I think David's got more to say on HVO. But what I'm really interested about is that where I sit as a someone reporting on the industry, I get so many press releases from and statements from machinery manufacturers and their customers like yourselves and contractors going, I think you got your first hydrogen or electric powered digger, 5 or 10 years ago or something. I mean, they've been knocking around for years. And you would have thought by now, judging by the PR spin, that there would be no diesel machines out there at all and everything would be battery powered or hydrogen. But it's still, my actual understanding is, it's very much at the edges. I mean, you say you have got machines which are powered by things other than diesel and HVO. But even though you're at the leading edge in terms of plant hire owners, I'm guessing still only, of your 2,000 machines, I'm going to guess you've got 20 battery-powered machines?
Yes, exactly. 1%. It's roughly 1%. And it's all along the mini excavators, small telehandlers. The small kit electric works relatively well. You've always got that charge infrastructure charging issue with sites. So they don't work for every site when you talk about remote working, but certainly they are finding their place in the market. And We've got the biggest electric excavator out there in the market at the moment, an 8-ton Hitachi. We've had it down in West London for the past 5 months, and that's been working down there to great effect. They get 4.5 hours a day work out of it.
It's about all they get out of me.
exactly. And it's doing a great job reducing CO2. So over 12 months, if we had that out working for 12 months, based on the stats that we've collected, it would reduce CO2 by 24,000 kilograms or 7,000 litres of diesel, which is the equivalent cost of £11,000 worth of diesel per year. So that's significant. And if you times that by 100, and talk about 100 machines doing the same thing. Now, that's 900,000 litres of diesel and approximately £1 million worth of diesel per year, which would be the equivalent of 500 return flights to Australia.
Right, but okay, it's something everybody can relate to. Meryl, you said you said that some of your customers want HVO, others stick to diesel. I mean, it just sounds like there isn't actually currently a consensus amongst your customers about the direction you need to go in. So to what extent are you sort of leading them, and to what extent are they leading you? I mean, you've obviously got to keep all your customers happy, but if they're all pulling in different directions, doesn't that make life difficult for you?
It's what we're used to. Being a supplier to the construction industry, we have to be agile. We have to adapt to what the customers need. Mm. The best we can do for our customers is, like we do currently, we have a digital and sustainability alliance that comes together every 2 months, and that's bringing contractors and sustainable suppliers together to talk about these new sustainable products that are out in the market, sustainable fuels and the like. And what we do at these events is we put these products, these new products, on the table, and we look at them, we touch them, we feel them, we test them out, we put them out in on site working, and then we look at the results and we decide, is this something for the future? Can we use it right now? Is it ready, or will it be ready in a number of months? And I think that's the future. Yeah. What we do as a member of the construction industry is we bring together contractors, suppliers, ourselves, and it's generating that energy to find the right way, to find a better way. That's our role in the industry, to help our customers find a better way. That's how we do it.
Yeah. Do you have a personal sort of opinion about the direction you want to go in? I mean, do you favour, for example, HVO or hydrogen or electric? Is there anything which you personally think is the way forward and you'd like your customers to get behind?
Yeah, I mean, my personal view is that electric is very well suited to machinery 9 ton and below. Mm-hmm. Machinery above that weight, I think hydrogen is going to be the source of fuel that's going to make the difference.
Oh, right. Okay.
That's my personal view of where the industry is going to end up.
And that'd be liquid hydrogen rather than hydrogen fuel cells we're talking, I'm guessing.
Yes, exactly. 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 Though saying that, I was at JCB not too long ago at their quarry in Staffordshire, and they do have hydrogen fuel cell. Well, they have both, actually. But the interesting thing about the hydrogen fuel cell is the affordability compared to the electric battery technology, because they had an excavator, a forklift, and they had a refueling bowser there, which the hydrogen fuel cell, when you look at the cost of that machine, it was 1.5 to 2 times the cost of your diesel equivalent, which is becoming more affordable when you think battery powered equivalents are three times to five times more expensive than the diesel.
Oh, is that much? Is it? So, I knew they're more expensive. I haven't heard that figure before. 3 to 5 times more expensive
for the battery power, depending on the size. If you're going into a 20-ton excavator, they are significantly more. I mean, $500,000. You'd be talking $500,000 for one of those right now.
Obviously, they're cheaper to run. I guess they're cheaper to run, but electricity prices keep going up. But what would be, how long would you have to own that machine working it at, 80% utilization for that to pay itself, to get your money back?
That's a really good question. I must admit, we haven't done the stats on that. But we do know for the smaller units, the smaller electric units, we know that the payback, if they are utilized for 35 weeks a year, that you're looking at a three to four year payback period.
That's not bad, but then that's probably their normal life. I mean, how long would you keep a diesel 5-ton mini excavator for?
Same.
And keep it 4 or 5 years, sell it out.
Same. Because the rate that you would hire out that electric piece of kit is more than you would hire out for the diesel equivalent. So the payback is similar. Because the higher rate is significantly,
but it doesn't really matter what you buy a machine for. All that matters is the rate that you get, because you're passing on the costs ultimately. Mm. Plus 10% or whatever that's gravy you make for yourself to live on. So it's the end user that's paying for it, rather than
That's right, 100%. And I think what's really interesting about where we are right now is there's so much futuristic technology out there, electric, hydrogen, HVO. But where I think it really matters for our industry is the here and now. I think there's a lot that we can do here and now that we're not doing. Mm. So I was on a site yesterday with one of our clients called BAM. Mm-hmm. And I was speaking to the works managers there, and we were reflecting on some of the recent sustainability successes that we've had. And there was a job in Windsor that we were doing for BAM, for the Environment Agency. And the issue there was that the riverbank of the Thames was falling in. So the job was to put up rock armour along the side of the river there. And in order to do that, the traditional method is to send divers under the water to survey the riverbed. Now, when we heard about this challenge, we collaborated with BAM and we discovered a piece of technology from Leica, which attaches to the end of the machine arm, and it allows the riverbed to be surveyed above the ground without the need for divers. So it was much safer, better for the environment, using digital technology to get the job done 6 weeks ahead of schedule and saving the customer over £500,000 on the project. And I think this is a great example of technology that's out there that's been on the market for over 10 years and is still relatively undiscovered, but can make a huge impact right now.
Mm.
And that's where I think, as much as we need to look ahead and think about everything that's coming up, we also need to make an impact now.
That's a huge saving, £500,000. Can you attribute all of that saving to that just to that one device?
Yeah, because it was
really
because they'd done the project 6 weeks early.
Okay,
you can imagine all the savings on labour.
Yeah,
the savings on machinery.
Yeah, okay, so it saved on emissions as well, indirectly.
Oh, yeah, and emissions, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Similarly, machine control technology must generate the same sort of savings. If you can, you know, do a job in a single pass, get it right, do the job more quickly, exactly the same story. Yeah,
exactly, 100%. And with machine control, that's not nearly adopted widely enough as we stand here today. And machine control has been out for over 15 years, so we've got work to do. But there's huge potential to save. Emissions and money, actually.
Yeah.
If I come to you and say, you know, I want an excavator, dozer, dump truck, you know, to do some earth moving, can you supply me with the kit, please, Mel? And you'll say to me, yep, do you want machine control? And I say no. How are you then selling it? And why are you meeting resistance? Because in the long term, it seems a no-brainer, but I guess many people aren't in it for the long term or haven't got a long-term view.
Exactly. There's an education involved there. People don't understand it well enough, perhaps. And again, they're looking at that higher rate, the short term. They're looking at that short-term higher rate. You know, what's the price? Where can I get it cheaper? Of course, machine control costs money, but yeah, it saves money. So what we always speak to our customers about is the CAT Illinois experiment that they did over there, where they demonstrated that machine control, when used compared to traditional machinery, gets the job done 46% quicker, 38% less machine hours, and 34% less fuel. Proven. Yeah. So that's what we tell our customers, and often they do use it as a result.
Why don't they? What is the percentage? I'm guessing only, what, 20%, 30% will use machine control, or is it less than that?
Less than that. And it's that upfront cost. It's the cost pressure on contractors, from clients. They have to show that demonstrable saving upfront. But, I mean, you look at where you've got forward thinking projects, the best case in point is the A14 project, which was a while ago now, but that project finished 9 months ahead of schedule, which is unheard of, and they adopted machine control across the site. So that was a huge reason for that massive savings to the environment and financially.
I'm assuming that the benefit of machine control isn't uniform across the board. I mean, there are some projects like the A14, obviously, where it's obviously paid dividends. There must be some jobs where really its contribution is not so significant. Maybe somebody says, you know, I just want to dig this hole. I don't need machine control. So I imagine it's horses for courses, isn't it?
It definitely is. I mean, utilities, it would be minor need for machine control. Where machine control comes into its own is those big earth-moving projects.
Hmm.
That really maximises the benefits, for sure. You're absolutely right.
It's interesting. We started talking off our discussion this morning, talking about alternatives to diesel, and we've sort of segued sort of seamlessly into machine control. But I think what I'm getting from you here is that actually, if we just focus narrowly on alternative fuel sources, we're missing the big picture, that actually, if we want to do something to improve our sustainability, reduce our tailpipe emissions, our fuel consumption, we've got to look at the big picture. And obviously, efficiency and technology is a major part of that equation.
Yeah, the big picture is where it's at.
Mm.
And I'm a massive advocate for what we can do here and now. I was on a highways project a little while ago, and I spoke to our operators. I said to them, why are you excessively idling on site? And they said to me, well, it's cold outside and we need to keep warm in the cab. And we also need to keep the machine turned on, or the customer will think that we're not working. So I took this information to our customer and I said to them, what do you think about what I've just heard from our operators on site? And they said, well, this seems crazy. Of course, we don't expect your drivers just to keep the machine on to look busy. And it's a heck of an expensive hot water bottle to keep the machine turned on to keep warm. So they suggested to me putting up extra welfare facilities along the highway. So in that way, when the machine is not in use, the operator can go to the nearest welfare, a nice warm environment. And when they're required again, the customer can call them back out so they can turn the machine back on and get on with the work. As a result of this collaboration and initiative and the driver idling reduction campaigns, we helped our customer save over £600,000 of diesel per year, and a huge saving to the environment. Mm. I mean, further to that, we're trialing these plant cab heaters, which are operated by the battery in the machine. So the operator turns the machine off and they can still keep warm in their cab. So we're experimenting with this at the moment. But again, it's a here and now story about what we can do to help the environment.
Mm.
But it's collaboration, and it's the big picture. It's all rolled into one.
But ultimately, we're being told that we're not going to be allowed to burn fossil fuel. We know that in terms of highways, cars, it was supposed to be whatever it was, 2030. Now they pushed it back to 2035 or whatever the years were. Mm. But in pretty short order, in not very many years' time, the aspiration is that there'll be no diesel on a construction site within, five, 10 years, something like that. Considering how far we've come in the past 10 years, I don't think that's possible, do you?
I think we're a way off that. I do. I do think we're a way off that, Phil. There's so much to do with infrastructure. It's scary, actually, how much there is to do. But there again, I think it's one of those things where we do have to increase a sense of urgency by stretching ourselves for that 10-year target. It'd be much better to, get 80% of the way there than say, okay, well, let's give ourselves 20 years and, get 30% of the way. So I do understand the logic of having a target that's closer rather than farther away.
For the pressure.
Mm.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to increase that sense of urgency. Why are we doing these things? I mean, a great motivation for me, and it's my family. That's what motivates me with sustainability, because in particular, my daughter, Jocelyn, who's 7 years old, only this week I was in the kitchen, which I'm not normally in the kitchen, doing some washing up.
Did anyone take a photo of this, Meryl?
Yeah.
It's not really my thing. But I was there. I had the tap turned on full flow. And my daughter, Jocelyn, came bounding into the kitchen. And she said, "Daddy, Daddy, you're leaving the tap turned on too long. You're killing the world." Now, I honestly thought nothing of it at the time. But later that evening, when I sat and reflected, I thought to myself, you know what? She's absolutely right. We're responsible for the condition of the world. And that's why I want to make sure that I do my bit. And everyone at Lynch Plant does their bit to make sure that we leave the world in a better place. So that's my big motivation to drive sustainability.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would appreciate that. Yeah. So going back to the question of fuels and the search for sustainable alternatives, is there anything you think that we could be doing that we're not doing currently in terms of this sort of transition away from diesel?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's a very, very good question. I'll go back again to what we can do as we transition away from diesel is make the most of today, because I can tell you right now that we have machinery out there in the industry on full revs, idling 60% of the time, and no one is saying anything to that person. So that for me is the biggest win of all.
Yeah.
What we do today. So that's why I it was one of the call to actions that I want to say at the end. But that's why I want to link up with contractors and sustainable suppliers so they can join us during our innovation days.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sounds like you also need customers to say, we want a hydrogen-powered machine. We've seen that JCB or the Japanese are making these hydrogen-powered machines. Why haven't you got one? You go buy one and we'll hire it. Because I guess you're not going to buy one of these machines until you've got a customer for it. Is that right? Or would you take a punt on it?
We would take a punt on it, absolutely. And we've already have stated this to many manufacturers. You know, let's buy. Can we have one? When can we have it? Let's buy it. The trouble that they have is they can't sell it to us because of all the legislation around hydrogen. That's the blocker. A blocker is these old laws that are in place that need to be overturned at Parliament, which is all to do with the use of hydrogen. And that's why JCB are putting hours on the clock for their hydrogen machinery up there at the quarry, so that they can put that case forward to show it has been tested out in the world. It is safe. It can be stored safely. Therefore, overturn that law.
Right. It's a safety issue, is it, holding things up?
It is. It's a safety issue. And legislation is holding us back because of that safety issue.
So the JCB have got this machine, but they can't yet sell it. I hadn't realised that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think Joe Gilroy from Balfour Beatty actually raised that point last time we spoke to her, Phil. I mean, the thing about hydrogen is I think it's odourless, colourless. You can't tell if you've got a leak until it mixes with some oxygen, and then you've got an explosive mixture. And I think that's probably what's holding things up. People are worried about that, and they need to basically tick all the boxes and make sure that they can deal with those risks and minimise them or eradicate them completely. So
yeah, 100%. It does make you wonder, because we see the hydrogen buses. It does make you wonder, but I suppose, you know, construction sites, an ever moving environment, it's more risks involved. I can appreciate that.
Still some hurdles to pass then.
Add something to the hydrogen to make it smell.
Yeah, like they did with natural gas. That's right. Yeah.
That's a fake smell, is it?
I think so, yeah. I might be wrong. I mean, get a coal gas, what they used to call town gas, obviously had a very distinctive smell. I don't know. I think I'm sure they add something to natural gas to give it a smell. So maybe they could do that with hydrogen.
A bit of Brute 33.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we've had our half hour of Meryl, but David, should we let Meryl have the final word here?
Yes, do. Yeah, you mentioned calls to action, Meryl. Do you want to issue a few of those?
absolutely. So I want to put this call out to sustainable suppliers and contractors that are interested in joining us at our Innovation Day this September. So please contact me directly on LinkedIn. We're showcasing the latest sustainable technologies that can be physically tested and used on the day so that we can all be part of the journey to net zero. And my second call to action is for all contractors interested in driving down the carbon footprint on your site and potentially saving hundreds of thousands of pounds on your project, please get in touch with me so I can help via LinkedIn. That would be great. I want to do my bit.
Okay.
Are we allowed that sort of advertising, David? We're going to let him get away with that.
I should say, I don't know.
Other plant hire companies are available.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're all friends.
Well, you wouldn't be in business if you didn't take the opportunity to promote yourself.
Where would your event be in September, Mel?
So it's in Cambridgeshire at our training centre in Brampton.
Okay.
And I'd love for you both to be there. That would be absolutely terrific.
Well,
sounds like it could be a plan.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, Mel, thank you very much indeed for joining us. But from David and I, until tomorrow, I'm going to go see what Jeremy Hunt's got to say for himself now.
Yes, indeed.
But for another episode, thank you very much and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.